Good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On The Reader News Bulletin. Today is the 19th of March, 2025, and I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, ready to deliver the most impactful and informative news that shapes our world today. Now, whether it's local headlines or global developments, we've got you covered. Our aim is to keep you informed with stories that matter and spark the conversation. So don't miss out. Stay with us until 14:30. And remember, this isn't just about listening. It's about engaging. So we invite you to call in at 083-288-401 after each news update to share your thoughts, ideas, and questions. Now let's get right into today's news bulletin. A public discussion was held on Tuesday at the Wildlife Conservation and Scientific Bridges between Spain and Southern Africa, focusing on the shared challenges and opportunities in the field of environmental conservation. Emilia Salamain from the Spanish Embassy to Namibia shared insights into the significance of the collaboration between Namibia and Spain in addressing the pressing issues of nature conservation and fostering sustainable socio-economic partnership. Speaking to Eagle FM, Salamain highlighted the importance of environmental knowledge and the efforts to bridge projects between both nations. She emphasized that both countries face similar challenges in nature conservation, making their partnership even more relevant in tackling these issues collaboratively. Salamain stressed that these efforts are not just about preserving nature, but also about creating sustainable socio-economic opportunities for local communities.
That really linked Namibia and Spain. For instance, taking the climate forum as an example, there are specific ecosystems in Spain and in Namibia that are somehow very similar. Of course, the animals are not the same, but the challenges are the same. And who knows if maybe the solutions are also the same. That is why, through the forum, we wanted to put in contact experts from Spain with experts researching from Namibia. So let's see what you guys are doing in both countries, and maybe we can implement it first, you know, in Spain and in Namibia too.
And if we look at specifically from the success of last year's forum, which is the first event, obviously that was step one. Step two was obviously the day of the SADA. But just looking at the vast amount of knowledge around the subject matter, doesn't mean we can still, you know, develop more knowledge together and ultimately look where the path goes from there.
Yes, but in fact, let me correct you if I may. We are already. This is not the first activity that we organize in Namibia. In 2023, we organized an activity focused to women and girls in science, along with UNAM. We also later on organized an activity here at the Namibia Scientific Society regarding the ocean conservation, ocean creatures, the oceanic marine life ecosystem. And also in 2024, we did, of course, a forum, and we also organized an exhibition in the Swakopmund Scientific Society.
Dr. Fabiola Criseda, a veterinarian with vast experience on African and Spanish ecosystems, noted that the importance of the linkage between Africa and Spain is to leverage commonalities on environment and climate, identifying where potential problems in unregulated meat consumption comes from on the continent, and look to the scientific capacity building initiatives. Let's now take a listen to Dr. Criseda as she explains the idea behind the concept of One Health, which outlines how we need to look after the entire spheres of life on the planet.
Project to veterinary capacity. So just to give you a little bit again, that insight of the One Health. One Health is a concept that currently the World Health Organization, the Animal Health Organization, the FAO, so all the big guys, the UN, all the big guys in the planet that they are talking about connecting, they are adopting this concept. This concept started about 20 years ago for a bunch of researchers that we realized, listen, we have multidisciplinary problems, therefore we need a multidisciplinary approach and solutions to the problem. The health, we cannot continue understanding that we humans, we are isolated to the rest of the planet. We need the planet even much more than the planet needs us. Therefore, let's study and look around and let's work between different experts. It is an interesting journey, especially because when we go to these kind of congresses, they are multidisciplinary. So if you go with doctors to the congress, they will speak at the end of human health, and that will be the priority. If I go there, I talk about my wildlife health. So it's quite challenging, but slowly, slowly we are getting there. And why is it so important, this One Health approach? I don't know if you are familiar with this, but in the past 50 years, the humanity had wiped out the 50% of the population of wildlife, while humans have doubled the population of all species. So that is translated that we are currently living in sixth mass extinction, and again, I don't know how many of you are familiar with that. So this is many data that support this currently. I don't know how, you know, how kids still in primary school, they are talking about dinosaurs and freaking out about dinosaurs, how they were extinction. Like, guys, we're living exactly the same thing today, and not enough people are freaking about and stressed about this. And it's the first time that is one species destroying and annihilating the rest, which is the Homo sapiens. So here, as a Homo sapien on this planet, I feel deeply responsible. If me and my species is doing something, the minimum I could do is try to change that part of bring my fat. So just quickly, deforestation, climate change, change on land, biodiversity loss, all of these anthropogenic actions, they are the ones that they are increase the likelihood of infectious diseases. So in other words, the human origin factor driving species into extinction are actually exactly the same ones that do increase the likelihood of emerging infectious diseases. So here is the big question. Is wildlife a threat or is wildlife a threat? That applies in both ways. That applies related to when we talk a lot of times about infectious diseases, about wildlife as reservoirs of infectious diseases, wildlife can be a threat. But when we talk about the wildlife-human conflict, as well, then we talk about is wildlife a threat or is wildlife a threat? So just for you to know, emerging infectious diseases are a direct threat to global health, and they have quadrupled, four times more the incidence in humans and in wildlife in the past 50 years. So if we stop 1 second and then we say, what? Wait a second, in the past 50 years we killed the 50% or 60% of wildlife. And it happened to be just 50, exactly on the same time, we have so cheetahs that are highly susceptible to anthrax. Actually, my colleague did a few.
Here we hear from Dr. Quesada on how disease transmission is a spoken of battleground in Africa, with examples from tuberculosis transmission from cow TB jumping over to the wild buffaloes of Kruger National Park, anthrax that is a major killer of cheetah in parks due to consumption of being exposed not so fresh carcasses, as cheetahs only eat what they killed in a hunt and consume it immediately.
Yes, he used to be the vet at the Tosha National Parks about 20 years ago. And he did one of the first research on studying what is the immunity and the response of cheetahs, because they found out that every time there is an outbreak of anthrax, there is high levels of death of cheetahs. And I don't know, and if not, I'm here to tell you, cheetahs, they're not scavengers. Cheetahs, they only eat fresh meat. So they will only eat the thing that they kill themselves, and it's fresh. Because as soon as these carcasses start smelling a little bit, lions are going to come, hyenas are going to come, everything's going to come, and they're going to kill the cheetah itself. So they will only stick around the carcass when it's nice and fresh meat. Therefore, they don't have exposure. Natural exposure, normally, when it's low level of anthrax, they don't have natural exposure. So when there is an outbreak, then there is a big decrease in the population. Well, I think that affects climate change directly, condition of animals. That photo is in Gabon, one of the forest elephants. And a few years ago, we were walking there, and they're like, wow, that's look like a tame, suddenly a tame forest elephant. There's no such a thing as a tame forest elephant. I don't know if you can appreciate, but the condition of this animal is extremely low. It's strange because you can see everything is green, I mean, the grass, this is the, it's a wonderful place. I mean, the grasslands, the ocean behind, and the jungle in the other side. It's absolutely stunning. So it's like, how is it possible? Well, there's a few researchers that research that prove that the production of the fruits, they have changed due to climate change. So basically, they're not getting enough nutrition. The grass is there, but the nutrition is not there as they used to be. So it's directly, I mean, a contribution to the higher mortalities. So then, well, we always want, we used to see this photo, like, kitty cat, who is going to lose there? And probably historically, we will think, well, sorry, Katy. But actually, if you show us that photo to veterinarians, we'll see, well, that lion might kill the cat, but that cat can kill a full population of lions due to disease transmission. One example of disease transmitted directly from livestock, tuberculosis. Here in Namibia, you guys have a good control of livestock related to wildlife as well. Plus, buffaloes are very welcoming on this country. In South Africa, we have a massive problem. I don't know if you are familiar with that. Tuberculosis, the normal tuberculosis Mycobacterium bovis, which is the tuberculosis that normal cows host. It was transmitted to buffaloes 100 years ago. And currently, the 60% of the population of Kruger National Park are infected with tuberculosis. To the point that this tuberculosis is, the buffaloes are the biggest reservoir of tuberculosis in South Africa. So we cannot control that anymore. As least we killed the 60% of the buffaloes. And it's not only a problem on the buffalo, because, I mean, the buffaloes, tuberculosis is a chronic disease and it's adapted to cows. Let's call it the wild cow, the buffalo, no? So it's not killing them directly. So they are older and dying more, that easier, and the ones that they are sick and easier to catch are the ones that the lions are easier to get to them. And then the lions, we all know that the favorite prey of a lion is a buffalo, and then the lions eat the lungs, eat the heart, and then the lions get the tuberculosis. Lions, we all are well aware that they are animals that live in groups, and then they go and they lick the little ones, and they are social animals. So then they transmit it. But now we have bacteria that is not adapted to that species, jump into a species which is totally different. And now we are finding, first, 25% of the lions in Kruger National Park are currently infected with tuberculosis, Mycobacterium bovis, but the cow one, and the physiopathology is much faster, meaning the clinical that they're showing is much faster. In other terms, they are quicker sick and they die quicker, the little ones. So we are finding that a higher mortality of lions in the Kruger National Park. And that interfacing happened, this is a photo on Serengeti, which you might be, well, at Kruger, you guys, they are all fence, top of each other, that's your problem. So let's talk about other places, ecosystem, open areas like Serengeti. That's a photo with a doggy there.
The game is about to come alive on your mobile phone. Step into the Premier League with Showmax.
This is the league we want to watch.
No matter where you are, your favorite teams are just a tap away.
Here now is the big business that truly stirs the blood.
On the move, at home, with friends, it's your stadium. Experience football like never before when you subscribe to Showmax Premier League Mobile only for $69.
Welcome back. Now, in other news, as the 7th Parliament prepares to conclude its term on the 19th of March 2025, the nation is poised for a significant transition. On the 20th of March, members of the 8th Parliament will be sworn in and the election of the Speaker and Deputy Speaker will take place. In anticipation of this momentous shift, President Angolo Mbumba delivered his valedictory speech to the 7th Parliament during a special session marking the end of his political tenure. In his speech, President Mbumba took the opportunity to reflect on his political journey and urged parliamentarians to remain steadfast in their duties. He emphasized the importance of continuing to safeguard the laws of the country, calling on members to protect both the parliament and the Namibian sovereign laws for the benefit of all Namibians. As I end my political journey, I want to urge you all to protect this parliament and our sovereign laws for the sake of all Namibians, President Bumba said with conviction. Speaker of the National Assembly, Peter Kachavivi, also addressed the Assembly, expressing his gratitude to the members of the 7th Parliament for their dedication. He particularly acknowledged their efforts in putting in extra hours to complete discussions on pending bills and other important matters on the order paper, ensuring that key tasks were finalized before the conclusion of the parliamentary term. Secretary General of the Republican Party, Matthias Mbundu, also bid farewell to President Angolo Mbumba, expressing his gratitude to Mbumba, noting that we need to give him a standing ovation for being a selfless leader who did not use his position to influence, to hold on to his state power, citing that many African nations where sitting presidents refused to allow a democratic process of electing a president because they want to remain in power. And that President Mbumba has shown that Namibia is not part of those negative statistics. Matthias also took the opportunity to say, and I quote, "There are instances where you could have proven better leadership, such as the instance of the just concluded disastrous election, where you made a proclamation to extend the election in a way you did, but we can only say that you were misled to believe that you were doing well."
Thank you very much, Honorable Speaker. So I prepare the message of gratitude to our His Excellency Dr. Angolo Mbumba.
Yes.
So almost my namesake, Mbundu Mbumba. Yes. So thank you very much. It is a general knowledge that wisdom comes with the age throughout a person's life. And it's one of the greatest gifts in life. As the fourth of president of our republic, that burden of being a wise leader been placed on you through the unfortunate passing away of our two presidents, Dr. Hage Gottfried Gengo and the late founding father, Dr. Sam Safishuna Nouyoma. May their soul rest in eternal peace. So the nation was doubt your ability to lead, but you have proven many wrong that indeed you are a wise leader who have the best interest of all Namibians at heart of the first day.
Yes.
As its sitting president, as much as there was criticism over how you conducted certain matters of national concern, must we give you a standing ovation today of being a selfless leader who did not use his position to influence, to hold on state power. Honorable Speaker, Honorable Members, Your Excellency, President Dr. Angolo Mbumba, we hear of so many African nations where sitting president refused to allow a democratic process of electing a president because they want to remain in power. Yet you have ensured that Namibia is not part of those negative statistics, of which all Namibians should thank you for that. Yeah. There are instances where you could have proven better leadership, such as recently concluded disastrous election where you made a proclamation to extend the election in the way you did. But we only say that, but we can only say that you were misled to believe that you are doing well. For all voting,
yes.
Namibians only history will judge for those responsible for that gravel error for our democratic process.
Yes.
However, Honorable Speaker, Honorable Members,
you are right,
Your Excellency, President Dr. Angolo Mbumba, we were privileged to have led by you a humble wise man,
yes,
like yourself, because it allowed all Namibians to heal from untimely losses of our late president, Dr. Hage G. Gottfried Gengo.
Yes.
Honorable Speaker, Honorable Members, Your Excellency, Dr. Nangolo Mbumba, what the future holds for all Namibians under the leadership of President-elect Her Excellency Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah and soon to be sworn member of the 8th National Assembly will only be revealed over time, but we hope that it will be as stable and progressive as it was under your leadership. Honorable Speaker, Honorable Members, in short, I'm just finishing. In closing, I want to know on behalf of all Namibians whether you too will become a seasonal author as your cabinet minister are planning, or we will only see you at state functions. So that's the question, no need to answer. So however, in mind to spend your free time, just bear in mind that a leader never retires from his or her duty. They only take sabbaticals and resume for their colleagues with these few words from the Republican Party, Mhandu.
You are tuned into On The Radar News Bulletin right here on Eagle FM. We now go for a commercial break, but we'll be back with yet more news. We also invite you to partake in the news conversation. That is by dialing on 083-288-401. On The Radar, good afternoon.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
How are you?
Well, thank you. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. Mm-hmm. Eagle FM office, or am I on the studio?
You are on air.
On AI? No.
Okay.
I called the office, was supposed to. Oh, right, bye.
Our office number, can I give it to you?
Yes.
083-288-400. So instead of 01 at the end, you put 00.
Okay. 083-288-400.
400.
400, okay.
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
All right, bye.
And now for a commercial break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. In a major initiative to support aspiring healthcare professionals, the OSAD Africa Health Foundation and Velvicher University have signed a memorandum of understanding to establish the Dr. Esperanza Luvidayo Healthcare Scholarship. This new scholarship is aimed at supporting academically deserving students from disadvantaged backgrounds who wish to pursue careers in healthcare. The agreement, which was signed by Dr. Esperanza Luvidayo, chairperson of the OSAD Africa Health Foundation and Velvicher University, will provide both financial assistance and mentorship to students entering various healthcare fields. Dr. Luvidayo expressed her enthusiasm for the collaboration, noting that the foundation's goal goes beyond just covering tuition fees. Instead, it aims to raise future leaders in the healthcare sector. Under the terms of the partnership, the OSAD Africa Health Foundation will be responsible for selecting and mentoring scholarship recipients. The foundation will ensure that students meet both the scholarship criteria and Velvicher University's admission standards. This will guarantee that recipients not only receive financial aid, but also the academic guidance necessary for their success. In response, Pevechea University has committed to enrolling all scholarship recipients, offering financial support and providing academic support to ensure their success throughout their studies. Dr. Esperance Novidayo also expressed her excitement about the collaboration, stating, "We sought a partner who shares our vision and values, and we are thrilled to have found that in Pevechea University. Our mission goes beyond simply paying for tuition. We want to nurture the next generation of healthcare leaders who will make a significant impact in Namibia and beyond." Let's now take a listen to Pevechea University's registrar, Ndamona Kauluma. Good afternoon, Ndamona Kauluma, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon, Happy, and thank you for having me.
Sure. What motivated Pevechea University to partner with the OSAT Africa Health Foundation to establish the Dr. Esperance Luvidayo Healthcare Scholarship, and how do you see this initiative benefiting the students?
Thank you so much for the question. Pevechea University partnered with OSAT Africa Health Foundation due to our shared vision of improving access to healthcare education for disadvantaged students. This scholarship will provide financial assistance and mentorship to deserving students, enabling them to pursue healthcare careers without financial barriers.
And how does this partnership align with Pevechea University's broader mission to support disadvantaged students and promote careers in healthcare?
This partnership strengthens Pevechea University's commitment to inclusivity and equity in education. By identifying talented students from low-income backgrounds, we aim to foster a new generation of healthcare professionals who will address Namibia's healthcare challenges and contribute to national development.
Yeah. And what steps will the university intend to take to ensure that scholarship recipients receive the necessary academic support and mentorship to succeed in their healthcare careers?
Pevechea University will provide comprehensive academic support, including tutoring, counseling, and mentorship programs. We will also conduct regular progress reviews in collaboration with OSAT Africa One Health Foundation to ensure scholarship recipients excel in their studies and are prepared for successful careers in healthcare.
Okay. Ms. Kauluma, in your view, what impact will the Dr. Esperance Luvidayo Healthcare Scholarship have on the healthcare sector in Namibia, especially in terms of nurturing future healthcare leaders?
The scholarship will significantly impact Namibia's healthcare sector by empowering talented individuals from disadvantaged backgrounds.
And now for a scheduled commercial break, but we'll be back to continue with this news item when we return from the commercial break. Stay with us.
When it comes to delivering on your long-term investment goals, it's all in the numbers. Like the more than three decades we've been committed to seeking out the best investment outcomes for you. Or our 250 investment professionals serving clients from more than 100 countries, patiently building an enduring investment track record since 1991 to become our favorite number. One, the only global investment manager with roots in Southern Africa. Isn't it time to change how you see investing? 91, investing for a world of change. 91 is approved by NAMFISA.
Let's now resume that conversation I had with Pevechea University's registrar, Ndamona Kauluma.
To become skilled professionals and leaders in their field, over time, it will also strengthen the country's healthcare infrastructure and improve health outcomes nationwide.
Okay. Which students actually have access to this scholarship? And on what merit is the scholarship being awarded to them?
Through this partnership, we aim to establish a sustainable model for developing healthcare talent in Namibia by combining financial assistance with academic support and mentorship. Our goal is to create a steady pipeline of skilled professionals who can address current and future challenges in the healthcare sector while promoting equity in education and health services.
Okay. Thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay.
Bye. Mm.
And now we're taking a short break, but don't go anyway. Remember, you can also be part of the conversation by dialing in on studio. That is on
083-288-401. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi konora hetatu imwe, heali imwe, ne heali, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mwamberewa konora hetatu natu, mbali o hetatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mwane oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
In an insightful interview with Sonia Dulab, the CEO of Global Solar Council, Justicia Shipena, they dived into the rapidly growing field of solar energy in Africa and Namibia. The conversation centered around the transformative potential of solar power across the continent, particularly in Namibia, where the push for renewable energy has gained significant momentum. One of the key points discussed was the role of public-private partnerships, also known as PPS, in driving solar energy projects within Namibia. Dunlop emphasized the critical role these partnerships play in overcoming financial barriers and ensuring the widespread implementation of solar power. Through PPS, Namibia can leverage both public resources and private sector expertise to scale up solar energy adoption and improve energy access for underserved communities. Additionally, the conversation touched on the issue of solar panel prices and how the rising costs are impacting the pace at which solar power is being adopted in Namibia. While solar energy represents a sustainable and cost-effective alternative to traditional energy sources in the long run, the initial investment in solar panels remains a significant hurdle for many Namibians. Dunlop highlighted the importance of reducing this cost to make solar energy more accessible to a larger portion of the population, ensuring that Namibia can meet its renewable energy goals. The interview with Sonia Dunlop shed light on the challenges and opportunities facing Namibia's solar energy sector and how strategic partnership and cost reductions in solar technology could pave the way for a greener, more sustainable future for the country. Let's now weigh in on their conversation.
Represent both utility-scale solar farms, commercial industrial rooftop solar, residential rooftop solar, off-grid solar, floating solar. And in fact, part of the beauty of this technology is just how incredibly versatile and scalable it is. So really it can be done, it's almost like Lego. You can do it with one brick or with, you know, 1,000. And that's why it's growing so fast around the world, because it's so scalable. So just to give you an idea, last year we installed 600 gigawatts of solar around the world, which is absolutely huge, right? We also, towards the end of the year, we got to a huge milestone of 2 terawatts of total installed capacity worldwide. So that's the same if you take the entire electricity generation capacity of US, UK and India combined, that forms to about 2 terawatts. So to give you an idea of how much generation capacity that is. And we are have a target as the Global Solar Council, it's not just a target, it's a sort of high forecast of 8 terawatts of total installed capacity by the end of this decade, so by 2030. So that's what we are really aiming for. And we, as the Global Industry Association, are essentially looking at what the main challenges are to building out more solar, more storage, and how to address them. And the challenges that we see are really finance, grid, skills, and supply chains. And I can say more about all four of those. And what we really see as well in our market intelligence work is that the global, so we're doing very well, 600 gigawatts of solar, to give you an idea. You know, wind last year did about 120 gigawatts, so 6 times more than other renewable technologies. But what we are seeing is that build out, that deployment is not properly spread around the world. Mm-hmm. So countries like many of the countries that you're from are getting very little deployment, and most of it is concentrated in China, in Europe, in the United States, in India, and then some in Brazil and a couple other markets. But it's really concentrated in the sort of those OECD, Western, well, not Western, but OECD kind of big markets. Because we are very sensitive to the cost of finance. In solar, all the costs are up front. So we're very vulnerable to high cost of finance. And what we find is that in a country like Germany here, typically, you know, in a good times, you could get debt finance for a solar farm for maybe 3%-ish, whereas in Zambia, you're talking about 40%. And that makes solar very expensive in Zambia and very cheap here. And so we are looking to fix that with our International Solar Finance Group. And we said, look, yes, you know, last year was a big year for solar in Africa. This year, sorry, 2024, saw a slight dip, but we are predicting a big growth from here on. So we think that if you compare 2024 with what we're expecting for 2025, we're going to see 42% growth in solar plus storage across Africa. And that's really because the economics of these projects are so good. Because the economics of those projects are good, because the combination of solar plus storage is so powerful, on-grid and off-grid. You know, the more load shedding there is in South Africa, the more solar people install, because it's essentially grid backup. It's because we are starting to see some really big, big projects, 100 megawatt, 150 megawatt, come through in Nigeria, in Burkina Faso, in Egypt, in South Africa, of course, in Ghana. And we, as the Global Solar Council, are really trying to encourage more of those projects to come forward. Basically, if you create a guarantee mechanism where the government, with the backing of, if the local utility doesn't pay, then they will pay, then it's much easier to finance the project, to build the project, and you will find many more projects. Now, of course, that is still risk. The risk, someone still has to take the risk, but that is the number one thing we can do to really make these projects really bankable, really investable. And the other thing, of course, is really supporting off-grid solar, right? We estimate that 560 million people around the world, most of them in sub-Saharan Africa, benefit from off-grid products, off-grid solar plus storage. They may not have it at home, but they go to, you know, a cafe where they charge their iPhone, or they go to something else that uses it, you know. So off-grid solar really has so much potential to really bring energy access and you know, cost-effective energy access to every single corner, every village, every house, you name it. A solar panel this big and a battery can really be absolutely transformational in order to allow people to create businesses and allow people to really pull themselves out of energy poverty. So around the world, in Europe and America, there's been a big trend towards corporate power purchase agreements. So Google, Amazon, Microsoft are buying huge amounts of power direct from solar farms, wind farms, through these PPAs. This has driven a lot of build out of solar and wind in those markets, but none in sub-Saharan Africa, because the corporate power demand is typically not in sub-Saharan Africa, right? There are no big data centers, there are no big, food processing plants, whatever it might be. So that's the problem. What's the solution? Well, one solution, which has been proposed by Amazon, is that Amazon might have a huge data center in, Sweden. But instead of building a solar farm in Sweden, they would instead build it in, let's say, Kenya. And they would say that those two things, that they are adding, they are consuming power in Sweden, but they are building in Kenya, and therefore allows them to say that globally they are 100% renewable. And that would be fantastic in the sense that it would trigger a whole new stream of investment into solar, into renewables in sub-Saharan Africa, even though the corporate demand is not there. It would power the local community. Mm-hmm. The problem is that some campaigners and NGOs would then accuse Amazon of being not truthful about what the power they're consuming in Sweden, but also that there's still the issue of the cost of finance, that building a solar farm in Kenya is just much, let's say 50 megawatts. Building 50 megawatts in Kenya is much more expensive than building it in Sweden because the cost of finance is so high. So how is Amazon going to justify buying much more expensive solar electricity when it could be buying it more cheaply elsewhere? And that's something we haven't solved yet. It requires Amazon and a couple others to really come together and find a solution to how they account for this, essentially. Yeah.
Follow up in terms of these power purchase agreements. My country argues that PPPs are a solution to energy poverty.
Which country are you from?
I'm from Namibia.
Namibia, yes.
Do you think, what do you make of this? So PPPs, will they be a solution to that energy poverty within Namibia or within Africa?
Yeah.
And then,
I was actually talking to the Namibian Solar Association just last week in Nairobi. We met there, and all over the world, public-private partnerships are going to be absolutely critical to delivering these big-scale projects, but also to delivering off-grid solar as well, right? Yes, I think they're absolutely right. We need to blend public and private finance, and we need government and industry to work together to deliver the really ambitious renewables targets in Namibia. Namibia has a very specific issue that I think is 40 or 60% of its electricity is imported from South Africa, right?
This is from Zambia, and then we have from South Africa.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's pause here for a moment, but we'll be back shortly to continue with this news item. Stay with us right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
And I will resume that conversation between the CEO of Global Solar Council, that is Sonia Dunlop, with Justicia Shipena, where she emphasized on the role of public-private partnerships, also known as PPPs.
So for Namibia, moving towards renewables is actually also a really important way of delivering Namibia's own energy security. because at the moment you're importing a huge percentage of your power, which is good in the sense that you're benefiting from renewables across a bigger region. But of course, you know, the percentage is so high that you could argue Namibia is not exactly energy secure in terms of its electricity supply. So by developing and using the solar and the wind and the other renewable resources in Namibia, and it's mostly solar and battery storage, really, you will also be building Namibia's own energy security. And that's a really important aspect of what you need to be thinking about.
Mm-hmm. And I also need to get from you the pricing of solar panels. What impact, what assessment have you done, or if any, is that impacting countries like Namibia to tap into or expand their ability with e-mobility?
So I can tell you that the price of solar has come down 90% over the last 15 years. That's the complete revolution that we've seen in terms of energy over the last 15 years is just how incredibly fast the price of solar has come down, both in terms of the price of the solar panels, but also the electricity that we can sell. Same has happened with battery storage in the last couple of years, and that is absolutely transformational. What we are seeing this year, by the way, is it's come down like this, but it's ever so slightly going up. And then it will probably continue to go down. And that's just to do with dynamics in the Chinese market, essentially. Sorry, what was your question? You asked about price?
The impact that this pricing on solar panels have on African countries having that ability.
So what that means, the fact that solar and battery storage have become so cheap, what that means is that now solar is competitive with diesel generators, in many parts of Southern Africa, is a competitive grid backup technology for when there's load shedding, can sometimes even compete with the retail price that you buy from NamPower, the retail price that you buy power from NamPower, so it can be cheaper to install at home and consume as much as possible in your building rather than buying from NamPower. And also, it's cheaper to install in, if you have off-grid villages, it's cheaper to go solar and storage in many cases than building huge pylons to bring grid electricity that anyway often only works for about an hour or two a day, right? So the economics of how to bring electricity to sub-Saharan Africa have completely changed in the last 5 years. And diesel generators in particular, like honestly, if any of you are thinking of investing any of your savings into diesel generators, think again. I really think the diesel generator industry is going to be dead very quickly. Sometimes there will still be cases where you want to have solar and batteries and diesel generators. Yeah, if you need absolute guaranteed, uninterruptible power supply, have a few diesel generators as backup. But honestly, like in terms of off-grid and the market that diesel gensets used to serve, it's really moving solar very, very fast.
Mm-hmm. And what would you make of a local manufacturing of solar panels? Are African countries taking up this space, or are they more reliant on exports?
So we are working on a global strategy, a global high-level strategy for manufacturing of solar around the world. The truth is, with solar, when you manufacture solar and all the different components of it, you have to manufacture the raw polysilicon and the cells and the wafers and then the solar panels and then the inverters and so on. For most of this bit, you need huge economies of scale. You need gigantic mass manufacturing. Some of the factories, honestly, they're the size of an airport. Though that kind of scale, you can do it in China, you can do it in India. They're trying to do it in the United States a little bit, but kind of not as big. You need enormous mass manufacturing. So you need a huge domestic market to be sure that, someone's going to buy it. And you need huge land, you need cheap power, there aren't many jobs involved, I have to tell you. It's mostly done by robots. But you need cheap polysilicon as well. So realistically, I think what we should be envisioning is one major manufacturing hub for every region, every continent. That we say one place in Africa is going to be the place where Africa will manufacture solar. This is the long-term vision. And not really try and put manufacturing all over the continent, because then you'll never achieve the scale that you need, right? Mm-hmm. So you might say that's going to be in Morocco, maybe in South Africa, maybe in Egypt. You know, it has to be in a big market that can achieve the kind of scale that we need. And to me, that would be the most strategic way to make sure that Africa has PV manufacturing capacity. But I have to be realistic as well. At the moment, 80% of solar, depending on which part of the value chain you're looking at, is made in China. They make it very, very well, to high quality, to low price, a huge scale. They are the ones who've really brought down the cost by 90%. That is now being exported all over the world and delivering huge transformational benefits to people, you know, to 560 million people across Africa, across the world, who now have access to electricity. And the jobs are all in installation. The jobs are all in the putting of the solar panels on roofs, putting on the solar panels on solar farms, and so on. Uh-huh.
NamPower is in a country where there's so much space.
Mm.
The country is spread out in terms of where the communities live. 3 million people in a country, but so far apart.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to NamPower in terms of getting that space out when it comes to solar?
Mm.
But also another question that I have, do you think the demand or the shortage of lithium batteries is causing solar panel prices to escalate, or
you're seeing a shortage in Namibia?
No, there's a shortage of batteries in general in the world.
Oh, right.
Do you think this is something that is impacting solar, or is it the demand for lithium part of the problem that is impacting prices for solar?
No, battery storage doesn't really impact solar prices, but definitely usually the two are installed together.
Mm-hmm.
So if one is expensive, it makes the whole system more expensive. My advice to NamPower in Namibia would be, think about not just if you want to build really big, obviously get finance from the multilaterals, and think about also exporting it to South Africa and Zambia. So reverse the flows, right? Because that can, you know, we need to be thinking about a renewable super grid across the whole of Southern Africa.
Thank you.
And there you had it. For now, we take a trip to the marketplace. And when we are back, we'll be back with news beyond the borders. Our studio line is very much open and welcome for you to come through with your opinions, contributions, and questions. That is on 083-288-401.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsie Nehangano, The Osherero Omaimburiro, The Catholic Simane Kakarunga, The Afrikaans Sing Voor Dierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Welcome back. The latest edition of the Villager e-paper is out. Grab your copy and read it on the following headlines. Irrigation clients drown in $23.9 million Namibian dollar water debt. The ripple effect, US-RSA tensions on Namibia's economy. New land bill blocks foreign nationals from customary land. New basic education policy to tackle funding gaps. Kavango East farmers receive 2.6 million agricultural tools. Read about those headlines and more in today's The Villager e-paper by texting on 081-200-4144, and you could receive your tri-weekly social and economic dose of free news right at your fingertip. And now for some news beyond the borders. Proudly, South Africa calls on retailers to support local goods.
SACO says in many instances the price point for local businesses has been achieved where they compete fairly with legally imported goods on price. He says this should serve as an encouragement for consumers when they say locally manufactured goods are too expensive.
When we look at the goods that come into the country legally and we look at the cost, we are not far off. And for those who have products that are still relatively cheaper when you compare, you know, apples with apples, if they're the same tier in terms of where the products are, we're not far off. And when you compare with those, what you see is that it's economies of scale, it's the volume that they have. And so if we ramp up by way of giving shelf space on retail shelves to South African, you know, designers and producers, you are then giving them an opportunity to sell larger quantities, and input costs will be, you know, the cost will be reduced. And so as a result, we will then achieve that price point. We have achieved it. There are many stores that are playing at a lower level in South Africa, without naming any of them now, but there are many where that price point has been achieved, and South Africans are buying those. And the country of origin tells you it's made in South Africa. We just need to ramp up now in terms of making it available and accessible for customers.
That were exhibiting at the summit and expo reported an increase in visibility as well as increased interest in their goods and services in the past 2 days, from fashion to PPE and to innovation aimed addressing water challenges. Homegrown extra virgin olive oil businesses were upbeat.
We have a wonderful product that seeks to address the challenge of water collections from point A to point B, which is a 100 litre water wheelbarrow. And our product is tailor-made to maneuver in hard terrains, address challenges in rural and urban areas, all right? So it is meant to get rid of this situation of women head loading when they want to collect water from water wells, and children using wheelbarrows to put in different sizes of water drums to collect water. So we decided to manufacture a 100 liter water tank with a tap at the bottom end, which is meant to drain water.
We are trying to basically cut costs and just change the dynamics of just stationary supply in itself, to make it available for students, for businesses, for schools, and also just affordable stationery, basically. But also just the way we've also designed our stationery, it's to cut costs in terms of you don't really have to buy covers for the books in anymore. Our design is strictly, we have they're color coordinated, and you don't have to buy like stickers to write your name, so you can just add plastic. But beyond that, we also cater for different ages, from preschool, primary, high school, tertiary level, and we just wanted to make the brand very interesting. I think we're doing well so far, actually. For a young brand, we're doing great.
I've gotten a lot of exposure, I've gotten a lot of sales, as well as future collaborations that I'm working with. I've spoken to even suppliers that I can work with in terms of packaging, others in terms of also raw materials, so it's been actually quite great being here.
Mashimbia says the summit was able to facilitate and exceed more than 800 matchmaking meetings between buyers representing retailers and those representing large corporates looking for suppliers that they can list on their database who will supply them with locally made products.
Ethiopia and the African Development Bank is investing $7.8 billion to build Africa's largest airport.
Africa's biggest telecom operator, MTN Group, suffered a 69% slump in its full-year earnings, taking a major hit from a devaluation of Nigeria's naira and operational challenges in Sudan. The group said high inflation and interest rates in Nigeria has driven up its costs and widened its pre-tax loss by more than 200%. In Sudan, the group saw impairments of $643 million, and that's due to the ongoing armed conflict in the country. MTN Group, which has 291 million customers across 60 markets in Africa, said its group service revenue decreased by 15%. An Ethiopian Airlines Group announced that it will partner with the African Development Bank to build the continent's largest airport. The airport will be located near the capital, Addis Ababa, and it is estimated to cost $7.8 billion, though Ethiopia has not yet revealed the amount that the AFDB will provide for the project. The new airport, known as Bishoftu, will enable Ethiopia to increase its annual passenger capacity from 70 million now to more than 60 million by 2040. Consumer goods giant PZ Cussons Nigerian unit saw its shareholders reject a plan to convert its debt to equity. The company was hoping to convert $34.26 million in debt owed to its parent company. The loan was meant to help it recover financially after rising raw material and operational costs due to the Naira devaluation led to a rise in its foreign currency denominated loans.
The EU acknowledges Rwanda's role in Congo crisis, but action is delayed.
Thierry Mariani, European deputy, joins Africa News to talk more about the recent development in the DRC. The EU hesitated for a long time before taking a stance on the crisis in eastern DRC. What is behind this position?
The answer lies in the current situation, which is undeniable. Just today, the United Nations officially acknowledged in a resolution that the Rwandan army and the M23 are responsible for the occupation and looting of parts of Congo. The European Union has finally recognized this obvious truth. The pressing question is, why the delay? This truth has been known for quite some time, and it is evident that there has been a long-standing lobby, or one might say, a friendship within the European Union towards Rwanda. I recently read in a newspaper that Rwanda is considered the darling of the European Union. For instance, why does the EU frequently lecture certain African nations on democracy, even when the elections may not be perfectly organized, while it applauds Rwanda when President Kagame is elected with an overwhelming 99.13%.
And now this brings us to the conclusion of today's On the Radar News Bulletin. Up next is the Onkonana Dingi program with David Shombe. Don't forget to tune in for the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30 to keep you company on your way home. Now from Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye, and we'll see you again next time, same place, same time, right here on the Radar News Bulletin.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager. Wherever you are.
Estabeleça seus preconceitos de tecnologia. Explore os aplicativos que estão redefinindo o futuro, saindo do antigo e entrando no novo. Desde carregar itários físicos em papel até o mundo de versões digitais lineares. Veja as novas expressões usadas do Imba App. Sinta-se parte de algo maior. Experimente o inário digital na palma das suas mãos. Eis o novo melhorado Imba, que reúne vários inários em um só aplicativo. Aqui para unir uma nação e espalhar o evangelho. Alguns dos inários apresentados no app do Imba são o Elsen Eangano, o Oshierero Mai Muriro, a Católica Simaneka Karunga, African Sanfordiera e muito mais. Entre em contato conosco hoje se desejar que o inário da sua igreja seja adicionado à lista de inários do Imba App. Contacta-nos em 081-235-8063 ou envia um e-mail para digital@opalighty.com. Descubra e
baixe a IMBA hoje. Pode encontrar o IMBA na App Store e também na Google Play.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Olo mnangeshefa noa haraku shivifa oma akuroe kupitira mohoriki radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mukuru olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi konorahita tuimwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 081-7147-116. Mwamberewa konorahita tu natu, mbali o hetatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mwane oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.